Welcome to Christchurch Manchester Sermon Podcast.
We are one church that meets in various locations across Greater Manchester.
For more information about who we are or where we meet,
please visit www.christchurchmanchester.com.
What I've absolutely loved about this series so far is that we've gotten to see how Jesus was both human and had many of the same experiences that we have living on earth, but he was also completely God and all-powerful and all-knowing. Knowing that Jesus experienced the ups and downs of life as a child and a man living on earth is an incredible thought, that we have a God who came, stepped into our world so that he could fully be with us and empathise with our experiences. Amongst many, many other things in this series, we've seen that Jesus is the healer, that he's the giver of grace, he's the good shepherd, he's the light of the world, he's the giver of the Holy Spirit, and he's the anointed king. And now tonight, we're going to see that Jesus was also the abandoned one. And next week, we're going to look at how he was the rejected one. So we're going to jump right in with our passage. We are reading from John chapter 18, verses 1 to 27. That's John 18, 1 to 27. It says, when he had finished praying, Jesus left with his disciples and crossed the Kidron Valley. On the other side, there was a garden, and he and his disciples went into it. Now Judas, who betrayed him, knew the place because Jesus had often met there with his disciples. So Judas came to the garden, guiding a detachment of soldiers and some officials from the chief priests and the Pharisees. They were carrying torches, lanterns, and weapons. Jesus, knowing all that was going to happen to him, went out and asked them, "Who is it you want?" "Jesus of Nazareth," they said. "I am he," Jesus said. And Judas, the traitor, was standing there with them. When Jesus said, "I am he," they drew back and fell to the ground. Again he asked them, "Who is it you want?" "Jesus of Nazareth," they said. Jesus answered, "I told you that I am he. If you are looking for me, then let these men go." This happened so that the words he had spoken would be fulfilled. "I have not lost one of those you gave me." Then Simon Peter, who had a sword, drew it and struck the high priest's servant, cutting off his right ear. The servant's name was Malchus. Jesus commanded Peter, "Put your sword away. Shall I not drink the cup the Father has given me?" Then the detachment of soldiers with its commander and the Jewish officials arrested Jesus. They bound him and brought him first to Annas, who was the father-in-law of Caiaphas, the high priest, that year. Caiaphas was the one who had advised the Jewish leaders that it would be good if one man died for the people. Simon Peter and another disciple were following Jesus. Because this disciple was known to the high priest, he went with Jesus into the high priest's courtyard. But Peter had to wait outside at the door. The other disciple, who was known to the high priest, came back, spoke to the servant girl on duty there, and brought Peter in. "You aren't one of this man's disciples too, are you?" she asked Peter. He replied, "I am not." It was cold, and the servants and officials stood around a fire they had made to keep warm. Peter also was standing with them, warming himself. Meanwhile, the high priest questioned Jesus about his disciples and his teaching. "I have spoken openly to the world," Jesus replied. "I always taught in synagogues or at the temple, where all the Jews come together. I said nothing in secret. Why question me? Ask those who heard me. Surely they know what I said." When Jesus said this, one of the officials nearby slapped him in the face. "Is this the way you answer the high priest?" he demanded. "If I said something wrong," Jesus replied, "testify as to what is wrong. But if I spoke the truth, why did you strike me?" Then Annas sent him bound to Caiaphas, the high priest. Meanwhile, Simon Peter was still standing there warming himself. So they asked him, "You aren't one of his disciples too, are you?" He denied it, saying, "I am not." One of the high priest's servants, a relative of the man whose ear Peter had cut off, challenged him, "Didn't I see you with him in the garden?" Again, Peter denied it, and at that moment, a rooster began to crow. Okay, so a weird question to start with, but do we have any EastEnders fans here this evening? Growing up a Londoner, I watched a lot of EastEnders. I'm not particularly proud of this, but there we go. I used to love it. I used to take it very seriously and followed all of the ridiculous storylines and plot twists. And my favourite kind of EastEnders episodes were very occasionally when the storyline was kind of reaching that plot twist or a very dramatic point, normally around Christmas time for some reason, the EastEnders cast would film a live episode. Now, these episodes were particularly exciting, as you can imagine, and me and my sister would be absolutely glued to the screen. And normally during these live episodes, there would be a moment of absolute and very dramatic betrayal. It was normally involving a character called Phil Mitchell and his current partner of that time. And he would walk into a room and find his partner in bed with his best friend. And everyone watching is holding their breath. It's a huge moment. They're waiting to see what's going to happen. They're waiting to see Phil's massive reaction. It's a big reveal of betrayal that has been kept secret for about 20 episodes. But instead of getting to see Phil's reaction, you suddenly hear the dramatic drumbeat theme tune begin and the episode is over. In the passage that we've just read, there is a very dramatic revelation of betrayal. And it's not a trivial one. It's not a joke like EastEnders can often feel like. This is a soul-wrenching betrayal from a close friend. So for a bit of context, John, the writer of the Gospel of John, has just devoted the last five chapters of his book to what Jesus said and did with his disciples in this upper room. And now finally, we're moving on from that, and Jesus and his disciples head to the Garden of Gethsemane. Now this garden was a bit of a hangout spot for Jesus and his disciples. It was where they would have gone frequently to withdraw from their ministry, to have a rest, maybe to reflect and pray. It was a significant spot for them as friends. And so Judas, one of Jesus' disciples, who would have been very familiar with this spot, he would have gone there with Jesus many times. They would most likely have shared many precious memories there together in that garden. And so now on Jesus' final day, this was the place that Judas knew Jesus would be. And so the ultimate betrayal happens. Judas rocks up to this spot where they would have prayed together, they would have been together as friends. But this time, Judas has brought along with him a whole detachment of troops. And this wouldn't have been a small number of soldiers, but actually hundreds of both Roman and Jewish soldiers. What a betrayal, what a moment for Jesus. A close friend, someone who'd shared his life with Jesus and had followed him for years, was now using that same place, that same garden, as a way of trapping Jesus and handing him over to the authorities to be killed. I wonder if you've ever felt betrayal or abandonment on any kind of level from someone close. It's really painful. And what we see from this passage is that Jesus knows this pain all too well. He has had the very, very human experience of being betrayed by someone close to him. But unlike us, when we feel betrayed or perhaps abandoned by someone, we might feel the need to lash out in response or retaliate. Jesus knew that Judas was going to betray him the whole time. And crucially, this is why he headed straight to the Garden of Gethsemane. He knew that that Judas was aware that he would be there. Luckily, we're not in an EastEnders episode here, so we actually get to see what happens next. Judas arrives at the garden with this whole battalion of troops who would have been ready to do battle and probably expecting that Jesus would have been hiding somewhere in a bush, that they would have to search really high and low for Jesus. It says that they turned up with torches, lanterns, and weapons. They were expecting either to have to search for Jesus or at least to have to fight him. So it seems that actually Judas, Jesus's friend, has completely misunderstood who Jesus is on two levels. He's misunderstood not only the nature of Jesus, thinking that Jesus might want to fight back, but also the power of Jesus. He thought Jesus might want to fight, and so he brings with him all these soldiers. But the reality is, if Jesus wanted to fight, how many soldiers would really be enough? You couldn't have enough. And then we see this incredible moment where Jesus voluntarily steps forward and directly asks them who they're looking for. He's not hiding behind some trees or in a bush. He steps forward and asks them who they're looking for, and they declare, "Jesus of Nazareth." And he says, "I am he." In the face of betrayal, Jesus not only in that moment gives himself up, but he also expresses his deity. He reveals himself as God. And what happens when he does this? It says they all drew back and fell to the ground. I think this is a pretty incredible moment that I've not actually heard spoken about that often. As Jesus declares, I am, they all fall to the ground. You could read this and think perhaps the soldiers simply thought that as Jesus declared this, they assumed he was stepping forward to fight. But I don't actually think that was the case. I think in the moment that Jesus declared who he was and revealed himself as God and spoke those words, something miraculous happened. There was a display of the power and the presence of God, and they all fell over. What's significant about this for us? Well, it shows us that even in the face of being betrayed by a friend, Jesus remains completely in control of this situation and obedient to his Father. And even when Peter, an even closer friend and disciple of Jesus, tries to intervene and protect Jesus by literally cutting off the ear of one of the soldiers nearby, Jesus actually rebukes him. Jesus would not go to the cross as a victim, but he went voluntarily. He was not caught out by Judas's betrayal of him. He knew it was going to happen all along and still went. And so what we see in this first part of our passage is that amazingly, amongst the brokenness of humanity represented in Judas's betrayal, the plan of God cannot be stopped. In fact, what we see in this arrest of Jesus is actually the evil of human sin coming together with the plan of God. God used this as part of his plan. He cannot be stopped. So in the next part of this very dramatic storyline, all the disciples then flee from the garden and Jesus is handcuffed and taken away to the high priest's house. Now this would have been part of the Roman procedure. Jesus would then have to go on trial before the high priest. It would have been a bit like an interrogation style situation. And this guy was called Annas. He wasn't officially the high priest, but he was the power behind the throne. He was the guy that put the high priests in power. So this dude had a lot of power. And so they brought Jesus to him first. So let's picture it. Jesus stands before this man, a man of so much power and prestige. And what we see as the trial gets going and the interrogation starts is that actually this was an unfair trial. And even amidst fear and intimidation, as he's nearing his certain death, Jesus is concerned about the injustice of this trial. It feels out of place, doesn't it? We see the abuse of power in this situation playing itself out. It says in verse 19, when Annas questions Jesus, it said he asked him about his disciples and his doctrine. My family are really into true crime documentaries, so inevitably, whenever we go to London to see them, we watch one. And if you've ever been into these kinds of programs, you'll know that there always comes a point in the show where you'll see CCTV footage of a police officer or a detective with an alleged murderer in an interrogation room. And very often, these officers misuse their power, and they use intimidation tactics and body language, all as a way to get the alleged murderer to spill info. And this is actually kind of similar to what we see Annas using with Jesus. Annas wants to know, who are your associates? Rat them out to me so that I can get hold of them too. And secondly, incriminate yourself by telling me something really juicy. He's backing Jesus into a corner to get this information. And in this case, weirdly enough, it's Jesus's theology that he's interested in. And Jesus' theology wasn't actually a contested thing. It was obvious. The guy claimed to be God. And so Jesus points this out and essentially says, I've been preaching out in the open for everyone to hear. Everyone knows what I have to say. How can you not know what my theology is? The mincing of Jesus' words and trying to trap him was not how the sophisticated Jewish justice system was set up. In a proper justice system of the first century, you had to have outside witnesses, like we do today, to bring evidence against the accused. You couldn't just stand a man in front of a judge and say, okay, tell us what you did. And so Jesus realizes this, and he says, bring the evidence. He's asking for justice, and he's exposing the illegality of it all, even as he knows he's going to die. And when he does this, when he answers Annas' questions like he's told to do, verse 22 tells us that an officer standing nearby slaps Jesus in the face. Not only were Jesus' friends, disciples, abandoning him, but now the justice system too. In our world today, there is so much injustice, isn't there? Including, ironically, in the justice system. We hear about it all the time. We hear about police brutality against people of colour all over the world. We hear about rape cases where victims aren't believed. We hear about the abuse of power, sadly, as well, inside of the church. And amazingly, on Jesus' last few days, he makes a big point of condemning this. Even on his last day, he wants to make the point really clearly that he does not stand for injustice and the abuse of power. Our God is a God of justice. This isn't like a little sort of subplot part of this story. This is everything that Jesus stood for. Justice for the oppressed and the downtrodden. Maybe none of us right now are on trial, but maybe in other ways we might feel abandoned by powerful people. Perhaps it's politicians and the self-serving decisions that are so often made. Maybe as you've been reading about church leaders who have fallen and who've abused their power in awful ways, you feel abandoned by the church. I think Jesus would say to us this evening, I don't stand for that. When he was right in the heat of it, when he was up close and personal with people who abused their power, he didn't stand for it then, and he doesn't stand for it today. So we've seen Jesus be let down so far by Judas and then the high priest. And now finally we see that Jesus is abandoned by his closest and most beloved friend, Peter. So Peter was one of Jesus' closest companions. According to all of the gospel accounts, Peter, James, and John spent more time with Jesus than anyone else. And of these three, Peter stands out. Peter was kind of one of those really passionate guys who had a lot of audacity and excitement. And as we just saw, when Judas arrived with all these troops, it was Peter who jumped to Jesus' defence by cutting off the ear of one of the soldiers. I'm not sure how effective cutting off someone's ear would have been in the face of those hundreds of soldiers. But we can see his passion through this act, can't we? Peter had pledged to Jesus that he would stay by his side right till the very end. But what we see play out is a very, very different story. So whilst Jesus was being taken to this interrogation at the high priest's house, Peter and John had been following behind at a safe distance so they wouldn't get caught. They needed to see what was going to happen to their friend and to their rabbi. And when they get to the high priest's house, immediately this servant girl recognises Peter and she says to him, "You're not one of Jesus' disciples, are you?" And here comes Peter's first denial of Jesus. In verse 17, he says, "I am not." I don't think this was necessarily a planned or calculated denial of Jesus. I don't think Peter thought, okay, if someone asks me, I know I'm going to say no. I think it was a surprise. It was a spur of the moment reaction. I don't think he necessarily expected a servant girl standing at the door of this house to make him answer the question of whether or not he was a follower of Jesus. And so, unprepared, he failed. He failed because despite promising Jesus only just a few hours before that he would never deny him, he refused to associate himself with Jesus, who was his master and his saviour. After our evening services on Sundays, we normally go to the pub round the corner. And about a few months ago, we went and there was this comedy night on. Some of us will remember this awful comedy night that we went to. It was not good. In fact, it was actually really, really awkward, to put it lightly. And what made it more uncomfortable for many of us who'd come straight from church was that the guy speaking started making subtle digs at Christians and then suddenly began speaking about this very real and very deep pain that he had experienced through connections that he'd had with Christians. It was quite heavy and painful stuff. And to me, it kind of felt a bit out of place at a comedy night. And then he started picking on people in the audience, as comedians do. And as you can imagine, most of the audience there at this bar house in Fallowfield were students. And so he was going around asking what everyone studied. And I work for church, so I was sat there, and I felt this cold sweat come over me. I just began to imagine the humiliation I was about to face if this guy found out what I did for a job. I began to feel the hairs on the back of my neck standing up. My heart started beating. My internal dialogue went something like this. What are you going to say if he picks on you? You can't lie because you're the church leader and everyone here is going to know that it's a lie. What are you going to say that you do for a job? By the grace of God, he didn't pick on me. But that evening, it did get me thinking about what would my response have been. Would I have been really quick to deny my association with Jesus like Peter did when he was caught off guard? Peter then went on to deny Jesus a further two times. The teacher and the friend that he had pledged his life to and given up his career for, he now refused to associate himself with. He was afraid of what would happen to him if he did own up. We live in a country where being a Christian is legal and you are free to worship and go to church as you please. There are many, many countries where this is not the case. The punishment for becoming a Christian in Iran, for example, is the death penalty. This puts it into perspective, doesn't it? We have the freedom in this country to declare who we follow and what we believe in. But how easy is it for us to buckle under the pressure from society and friends when it really comes down to it? Are we willing to associate ourselves with Jesus? Are we willing to follow Jesus even if there is a cost? Even if perhaps we do lose friends or we lose our sort of social status? And when we're caught off guard like Peter was, is our response ready and there on our lips? Jesus was abandoned for our sake. He was abandoned by his friends, by the people he shared his life with and trusted in. And he was abandoned by the authorities. The very people he had come to save abandoned him. Let's let this sink in for a moment. I'm going to read from Isaiah 53 just as we're coming into land. And let's just contemplate Jesus, the abandoned one. Maybe you've never officially decided that you want to follow Jesus. And as I read these words, just take a moment just to picture him on the cross, abandoned for you. Allow these words to sink into your heart. He did this for you. Says in Isaiah 53, he was despised and rejected by mankind, a man of suffering and familiar with pain. Like one from whom people hide their faces, he was despised, and we held him in low esteem. Surely he took up our pain and bore our suffering, yet we considered him punished by God, stricken by him and afflicted. But he was pierced for our transgressions. He was crushed for our iniquities. The punishment that brought us peace was on him, and by his wounds we are healed.
Thanks for listening.
To explore this sermon or learn more about our church, please navigate to the links provided in this podcast description.
From there, you can connect with us on social media, and you're welcome to check out the music links featured in this episode from our very own musicians.
You can also discover current events and information about where we meet on Sundays and various groups or community projects that you can join in with.
If you're interested in knowing more about us or wish to join us for one of our meetings, please reach out.
Simply drop us an email at hello@ccm.org.uk.
We look forward to connecting with you.